Hi, it's John Kuhn here. Welcome you back to Open Minded. This podcast isn't just a conversation. It's a deep dive into helping you feel better and perform better in both your personal life and the workplace. Each episode will feature conversations with extraordinary individuals from various fields. Together, we'll inspire you and share strategies on how to elevate performance and care for yourself and your team. We'll hear real-life stories from experts, business leaders, and community advocates on how they maintain high performance and take care of themselves under pressure, recover from setbacks, and get the right balance of lifting people and performance. So this is JK bringing you Open Minded. Let's dive in. Welcome back, everybody, to Open Minded. And it's been, yes, it's been 2 years. And you're probably saying to yourself, you're so lazy, JK. You're supposed to really concentrate on these podcasts and build your audience and all that sort of stuff. And you're right. But we are back, and we're back because I'm really passionate about this space. We've made some incredible change to Groove, and we've really driven down what I call, or what we all call, performance care. So the first one back after the two-year hiatus is I'm going to get all the brains in Groove to talk to us about what it looks like. So when we move forward, when you hear the word performance care, you'll know what the hell we're talking about. So you'll be able to verbalize what it might mean. And there's so many doctors in the room. So I have Dr. Laura, Dr. Carolyn, Dr. Fiona, right? And you have non-Dr. JK. What I'm going to do is get all of these beautiful people to introduce themselves, and then I'm going to fire questions. And it'll probably end up, as JK does, going down a rabbit hole. But hopefully that rabbit hole is interesting. So maybe start with you, Fiona, because people might know you from a few of our other stuff, but if you can introduce yourself and then we'll jump into it. And what the difference is between all your doctor stuff.
Oh, thanks, JK. Yes, I am Dr. Fiona. I have been at Groove for a while. I'm a behavioral scientist. I am VP of behavioral science here. I bring the component of the motivation to change, to do the stuff, to do the behavior. And I'm still here and I'm loving it. I'm really keen on introducing the idea of performance care, the idea of how do we get organizations to perform in a peak way? And to do that, we have a variety of brains. To bring the brains into Groove, we wanted to make sure that we weren't just repeating the Fiona stuff. We've got some extra layers in here to make it incredibly useful and applicable. So I'm going to throw over to our incredible organizational psychologist, our chief scientist, the amazing Dr. Laura.
Aw, thanks, Fiona. So hi, everybody. I'm Laura Hamill. I am an organizational psychologist. So that basically means psychology applied to work. And my specialty is thinking about the bigger systems at work, especially culture and climate, and how those impact the employees that are working with them. So how do we create the conditions where people can do their best work? So that's my focus. And I started with Groove a few months ago, and I get to work primarily on the product, the new product that we're creating, and how we make sure that we're weaving science into it. And so I get to do that with Carolyn. So Carolyn, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Yes. So I'm Carolyn Pritchett, and I am a cognitive neuroscientist, a cognitive psychologist and neuroscientist. And yeah, I've had the pleasure of working with both Dr. Fiona and Dr. Laura. It's been a wonderful experience being the head of neuroscience here at Groove. And in my background, my research, I studied stress, motivated behavior, and understanding how the brain and the body work together to move us through life. So that's a very quick version of my background. And I'm looking forward to this conversation with you, JK.
Agreed. I'm not looking at my phone, but I'm just looking down and writing questions and notes for my monkey brain. So I've already got heaps of questions. But the first question I want to ask you, and this really frustrated me, and it's no one's fault. When I went into businesses, everyone would say, oh, yeah, we've got a well-being program. And I often talk about Eastern technologies for looking after yourself, meditation and yoga and all that stuff. And what we do in the Western world is we turn them into a six-week course and you get a certificate, which is wrong, right? Being in the workplace for me has been really stretched and pulled, and it's lost its way a wee bit. I don't know if you guys think the same, but why is it so important to identify performance care instead of well-being?
why is performance care important when we know that there seems to be a little bit of fatigue around well-being? And the truth is, when you're thinking about all organizations really want to create the environment, the situation where they're doing the best work. And that for them means probably making profit. It probably means having productive employees. It probably means that in the workplace, people are innovative. If it's a company that really is on the cutting edge, and almost all companies really, when you think about it, innovation is often the key to their success, to their longevity. So when you think about well-being, I think we get this narrow idea that well-being is really this nice to have thing, that people will rock up to work and they'll feel good. But we forget about the function better part of it. And so really what Groove has done is said, okay, we understand there's some fatigue around well-being, but actually when you think about the science, and we're about workplace science is about what are those necessary preconditions for people to be able to actually function well at work, which means that they are doing their best work, that they are able to speak up and be creative. Leaders are not burning out at the rate that we're seeing around the world. And in the end, you're able to create this thriving business. So well-being is part of it, but I think well-being becomes very narrow. The idea of well-being for many people is, as you say, JK, it might be meditation or fruit bowls. When we talk about care, that's not what we're talking about. When we're talking about care, we're talking about the preconditions for people to actually feel good and function better. And care is also about leaders being able to lead teams in a way that allows the teams to do their best work. And we can talk about some of the components of that. And organizations understanding how they need to operate, and Laura can speak to this, so that they create the teams that they want, that they're creating the products that they want, and doing it in a seamless and easy way. It's about sustained performance. And that's really what the care is critical. If you take the care out, you don't get to that sustained peak performance. And so we talk about care now. What are the preconditions to get to that performance, which is about human beings, it's about teams, it's about leaders, it's about organizations. And the secret sauce for us is bringing all of those components, organizational psychology, behavioral science, and neuroscience together to say, how do we do it? I'm going to throw to you, Laura. What's your take on this?
I just want to come in before you start, Laura, just because I need to break that down in my simple head. So what we're saying is that most businesses, we had performance, and most people can do that. You know what you need to perform, but the care was left out of the conversation. What we're saying at Groove is you now need to bring those two together. Otherwise, you're not going to get either. You're not going to get performance and you're not going to get care. Is that a fair understanding? So, Laura, it'd be fair to say that most businesses and most people who work in businesses leave half their body at the door, including the boss, and you come in and you think about performance, and we've left a lot of our family problems at home. We've left a lot of our other stuff at home. I mean, I think that COVID has really accelerated the care piece into the work. But how do you actually get businesses to think about this from an organizational point of view? Because COVID, everyone's going, yeah, I had a podcast and Carolyn's cat walked over her head and her husband and someone's husband walked in naked and that was embarrassing. And I realized that people have got a life and care about them. And then COVID finishes and shit, the bottom line, we're in a crisis. Yeah. So how do we actually get organizational businesses to realize that this is actually it's a fundamental thing that you will do if you want to stay ahead of the competition?
Completely. And that they go hand in hand. And to Fiona's point, you can have temporary blips of high performance without caring about people. The problem is it just won't last very long, right? Because this is where we start talking about people burning out and people unable to continue to be engaged over long periods of time because they haven't been focusing on caring for themselves and the organization hasn't cared for them either. So yes, it has to be that both of those are true, the care and the performance, in order to sustain that over long periods of time for people to keep coming back and giving their all, right? We have to be able to care about them as human beings. So yes, they go hand in hand. And just a little bit more about the well-being piece that you were bringing up before, JK. There was a big, before well-being, at least in the States where I've focused a lot of my work, there was a focus on wellness. And for us, wellness was much more about physical health, like lose weight, stop smoking, don't get in, have a safety accident. And we were so excited to transition from wellness to well-being, which was much more focused on the whole person and caring about overall quality of life, right? That you're a person at work and outside of work, and we shouldn't think about those as so different from each other. And so now what I think we're seeing is that well-being now has a bunch of baggage, right? Well-being has baggage because we focus so much on, hey, you, here's a bunch of resources. Go fix yourself. Go take care of that and come back when you're done. And now what we see in the evolution we're talking about is how do we make sure that organizations see their role in this and understand how important it is that they are supporting, actively supporting their employees as human beings. And what that means is we have to change a lot about work. We have to teach people about that, but we also really have to change a lot of the climate and the culture at work in order for that to happen. So that's the kind of evolution that I've seen that's overly simplified, of course, but there's a lot of work to do to get organizations to see how what they need to do and also to see how powerful it is once they do that.
Okay. I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about me and my job and my performance care. And Caroline, what, like, you're a neuroscientist, right? And Laura just said, it sometimes it's okay to do the whole performance stuff, but it's not going to last. And I think if I look at my life, it is like that. I'm very good at caring for myself. But we talk about burnout, but what is overdoing the performance side without the care? What does that start to look like for you, your brain, your body? What are some of the signs I should be thinking about if I'm the CEO and I'm driving towards a budget or I'm driving towards a goal? What should I be looking for in myself and in others?
Yeah, you definitely start to see dips in performance. And a big one that people, it's hard to quantify in the moment, but you can definitely see dips in creativity. When people are starting to get to their maximum, they're not going to be able to think as clearly and as innovatively as you might need to be at that maximum performance level and your peak performance. And so that's just a function of your brain only has so much capacity. And this is the reason why we sleep, for example. So sleep is a fascinating thing, and we'll talk more about it. Fiona and I will be talking more about that here soon. But sleep is really fascinating. We have to have this moment to pause, our whole physical self, brain, body, to pause and reset. If we're just burning the candle at both ends, our brain's eventually going to lower down and gear down and shift down into a more long-term sustained level, which means you're going to start to lose some of the things that make us really cool as humans, like problem solving. You start to siphon away energy and resources from those parts of the brain and put them instead towards just surviving. So it's a balance of thriving and surviving. And there's a really interesting story that I've heard where you think of the same individual in two different cases. And so this particular person worked, I won't name the hotel. This particular person was a barista at a hotel in Las Vegas and said they loved their job and they brought all of themselves to the table and they were helping other people at work and really performing, going above and beyond. They also told, this was a Simon Sinek interview. They also told Simon Sinek they worked at the same time at another hotel and they didn't perform as well there. And the difference was because at one place, their managers would stop in, check on them. Do you need anything? How are you doing? Showing that care side. Whereas at the other hotel, the managers were all about performance. Are you meeting metrics? Are you getting the sales? You know, and as a result, the person couldn't perform the way that they wanted to and the way that they were capable of. So it's a matter of finding the right balance between performance and care, but you have to have the conversation about care. And as to Laura and Fiona's points, it's an organization-wide experience. So yeah, Laura.
Well, I've got a question. Oh, sorry. Go, Laura.
I was just going to build, just say one more thing. The idea of care sounds so simple, right? But there's actually a ton of research on what's behind it. It's called organizational support theory. And there's all kinds of research, continued research, to support what Carolyn just said. So I just wanted to point that out, that there's a lot of science behind the idea of asking how we can help more, what people need for support, showing that you care, that actually makes a difference when it comes to results.
Okay, here's a question for you. I've just done another podcast. I was being interviewed and that particular person had just come through burnout, right? And we spoke about this thing and how our brains just don't get a break anymore. We've got more inputs in our brain than our grandparents had in a lifetime. We're even taking this to the toilet. So with all these inputs, and that then leads you towards drop performance, you're not being creative anymore. I ask a simple question, when was the last time you were bored? And everyone goes, oh shit, can't remember. Because when we're bored, we're picking this thing up. So my question for the three of you is, how do we take control back? You know, as parents, we need to start, because technology is overtaking us as parents, so you need to set some rules around inputs and all that sort of stuff. But in the workplace, Fiona, how do we actually prove this out to the CEO that if he actually puts some of these things in place, then they are going to change? And I guess that, you know, if you could all answer that question from your speciality point of view, how do we actually go, okay, I'm going to do this and I will see the results in this way?
You know me, JK, I like to go to the science. And I think what happens is CEOs, business people like to understand the why. Because traditionally, and as I was a lawyer, we worked in 6-minute increments. We were all about inputs, not output. So one of the things that we need to do is understand, if we care about output, if we care about people performing for us, we have to understand the science behind performance. And one of the things that's really clear from the literature and the science, and Carolyn will be able to give you some examples, is that if you do, for instance, back-to-back-to-back meetings, we now know, because we've done some functional MRI studies, we've done some EEG studies, we've looked at brain waves to see what goes on. If, for instance, you do a 2-hour meeting without a break, 2-hour video meeting, but I assume it would be this. In a meeting that's not virtual, you sometimes have some of those natural breaks. You might turn it around and you might have a chat with somebody. But when we're on screen, what happens is we tend to be performance mode. We don't tend to have those side conversations. We tend to be concentrating and focusing. And what we know from the science is that if you don't take breaks every half an hour, just for 5 minutes, that your brain starts to get foggy. It's exactly what Carolyn said, that you start not being able to attend to what people are saying. We can see this from the science, and you're not encoding what people are saying. You're not remembering what they're saying. And by the end of the 2 hours, you're just getting through it. But there's really robust research to show that if every 20 minutes or half an hour you actually stepped out for a couple of minutes just to reset, that your energy levels don't fail at all and you keep up your performance through the whole 2 hours. So science, I think, will save us here, because we can see that there's so much stuff around. If you spend some time breathing, 2 minutes of breathing, just dropping the breath to the belly, because often when we're focusing, we hold our breaths. We're actually in kind of performance mode, and stress is good. We don't want stress out of the workplace, because stress is galvanizing. Stress can help us. Having a deadline is a good thing. What we don't want is burnout. So if we know from science that if you drop the breath to the belly for 2 minutes, that you're more likely to be able to problem solve, you're more able to focus. There are studies upon studies to show this. I think this is where we get the buy-in. Because up until now it was, oh yeah, I can be a caring boss, but I actually am all about the performance. What we'd say at Groove is, if you want to be about the performance, you have to think about the way people are working. What does the science tell us about how they're working? What about you, Laura? What do you think?
Yes to all that. And I really am fascinated around the topic of employee engagement. So engagement, that deep connection and sense of purpose from work. And I think sometimes when we think about burnout, remember, that's what was happening, is somebody was so hyper engaged in their work, right? They were so into it that they sacrificed everything for it. And so I think sometimes what we don't spend time on is really understanding how to moderate engagement, right? How to think about my own engagement with work and how I can psychologically detach a little bit from it and not still lose that sense of engagement, right? Because being engaged at work is the best feeling ever. When you feel that deep connection, you feel a sense of purpose through your work, it feels so good. And we, when we're leaders of organizations, we want people to feel that feeling, because that's when we get some of the best results in organizations, is when people are highly engaged. But what we have to realize is that engagement is not like putting your foot to the gas all the way, all the time. It's more has to come in waves. And we have to give people the opportunity to have a break, right? And detach and have a break and detach, at least at night, right? At least they should be going away and not thinking about work and having full time where work is secondary, not primary. And I think you're right, JK, that having the phone and looking, checking your email all night long, you never have a chance to have that kind of wave recede a little bit so you can have, you can basically build back up for the next day. So I think that engagement, employee engagement piece of it is such an important piece because I think we sometimes are so all or nothing, throw it all away and not think about moderation and not think about how we can really find that way to detach. What would you add, Carolyn?
I'm so excited to talk about this. So just to build on what you've both been saying, I'm absolutely spot on. And I wanted to add, boredom is one of the most exciting things. If you can allow yourself to find a few moments of boredom, I know this sounds really crazy, but that is when you allow your right brain to come online. And the right brain is interesting because it's always running in the background. I like to talk about the right brain as a parallel processing computer versus a serial processing computer, which is your logical left brain. It says A, then B, then C, and that equals X, right? But your right brain is taking in information that you may not even be consciously aware of, things that you've heard, things that you've experienced, memories, and so on. And if you allow your left brain to shut down for a few moments and you allow the quote unquote boredom to come in, and this can be done through micro breaks, which I'll touch on that in just a moment. But going back to what you were saying about engagement, Laura, sometimes if you allow yourself to be a little bit, quote unquote, disengaged, or at least appear to be disengaged, that actually frees up space for your right brain to come online. And that's when you get these intuitive hits, these flashes of insight, these light bulb moments that so many people are striving for, particularly in certain organizations and professions. You are really trying to strive for that, and your left brain gets in the way. So the second thing I want to say about that is, going back to what Fiona was saying, research has very clearly shown us, look, we are humans in a physical 3D body, and that comes with certain limitations, right? There are certain boundaries around what we are capable of doing physically, psychologically, mentally, and so on. And so one of the things that has been very clearly shown is that ultradian rhythms, which are these 90-minute cycles that we go through every day, all day, and this includes when we sleep, we go through 90-minute cycles when we sleep. We go through the different REM and the different stages of sleep every 90 minutes. If we are working and trying to work at our best and at our optimal levels, we're taking breaks more than 90 minutes, ideally, but absolutely at the 90-minute mark, you just want to take a longer break, whether that's creative-focused work, whether that's a meeting with someone else. And if you pay attention to your own kind of life patterns and watch yourself, you might notice your ultradian rhythm may be a little bit shorter. Sometimes when we're doing really intense focused work, or when we're thinking about really serious topics and having serious discussions, we might tap out sooner than the 90 minutes. Just take a bit of a break, reset. You can get rid of attention residue, come back fresh. And again, boredom is actually a great thing. It's been demonized in our society because time is money with the way that we work in the industrial era. And that absolutely understandable, but we have to be aware that the human body is not a machine, and most machines can't run 24/7 either. They need breaks, they need maintenance, right? And we are no different as human beings. And so I'm not trying to put us in the category as being a machine, but we do have to be aware that we have certain limitations, our brain and our physical body, and we have to be aware of those. And if we work with our brains and with our bodies, we can sustain our performance for much longer periods of time. So just to add on to what both of you said.
That is beautiful. Now I know why you're all doctors. So good. I've written a question for the three of you, and I want you to think about it. And then this is a real challenge for everyone, right? So I write this to myself often, and it's this. Stop being a hero, JK. Shit, I'm busy. I've got all this shit to do. Well, I'm busy. And it's become a bit of a catch cry, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. I just keep saying yes to shit and keep getting busier and busier. I need to keep saying to myself, it's that hero syndrome. And we all do it, right? Do we all do it? So how do we actually make peace with ourselves? Because the perception out there is, yeah, go hard. You can do your 400. pick the kids I am. But it's bullshit. So how do you stop and say, actually, I do need to care for myself? Because there is the perception, and I've spoken to some incredibly successful CEOs who have this, what I would call an illness, which is workaholic, right? And sometimes they can't see in others that there's different rhythms. So how do you say to yourself, it's okay to be bored, it's okay not to do everything, because the world is pushing us in another direction? Start with you, Fiona.
Oh, okay. All a work in progress when it comes to this. There's lots of reasons why we say yes to things. And I like to think that in a workplace, we can start to help each other. Because I know that you and I, JK, we tend to say yes, we tend to push ourselves. But also there's a thing about sharing. I'm thinking a lot about how I bring other people in to give them opportunities. So sometimes it might be reframing in a work context, because that being a hero sometimes can be at the cost of your team. So starting to think a little bit more broadly about the idea that, yes, if we look at heroes, and I'm thinking about law, I think about sometimes we had heroes, and this is 20 years ago, who were always bringing in the bucks, they were performing, they were the superstars, but often it was at the cost of their team actually getting the opportunities to also perform. And when these leaders were trained to step back a bit and bring people on the journey, not say yes to everything and try and be the hero all the time, but actually bring other people into their teams, their team performed better. It might be that, and that individual had more balance in their life, so they were able to sustain their performance. So I think that there's a little bit of reflecting why we say yes to things and try to be the person who takes the center stage, especially in a work context. As leaders of teams, we sometimes have to think about the people before us and understand their workloads. Understand if you've got someone who's always putting their hand up, we love those people on our teams. They're the people that we want, the people that are selfless. They're always giving of themselves. But sometimes you have to think, is the reason the person who's putting their hand up because they feel comfortable to speak up? Are there people on your team who are being quiet, who need the opportunity? So there's a little bit about the hero, even as a concept of the person who says yes all the time, instead of going, how do we do this collectively so we're all getting the most out of each other and helping and supporting and elevating the people around us? And also thinking of ourselves, to Carolyn's point about being whole people, because if we're saying yes to everything, honestly, there will be somebody that's suffering in our immediate circle. Laura.
That's so good. And I think that really, what you just said, Fiona, really says a lot about kind of performance care at a higher level, right? It's not thinking about this at an individual level, we're thinking at it the collective level. Right? How do we create a culture where people do that, where they see that, gosh, we can balance this out. We can work together. It's not just about me versus my teammate. It's us together. I love what you just said. So I definitely can relate to what you were saying, JK. And I have had multiple jobs. I had one of my last big kind of more corporate jobs. I just had one of those jobs where I had back-to-back meetings, like 30-minute meetings. And one day I had 16 meetings in one day. But they were all 30-minute different topics, right? And I realized, what good was I in any of that whole day? What good was I? I felt like I didn't add any value at all. And I was exhausted. And so I'd gotten to this point where I was dreading going to work. If you can imagine, that's pretty draining. And to not feel like you're making a difference and not feeling like you're doing your best work. So I remember it was around that time I was working with my therapist, and she said, what would a dream day look like for you? And I remember she said, just get a blank piece of paper and design your dream day. And I remember doing it and feeling ashamed. Oh, can you imagine if like you took your time drinking your coffee in the morning? Oh, that sounds like such a luxury, right? Oh, could you imagine if you actually could work out in the morning? Oh, that just, I almost can't even write it down. It seems so like foreign from what I'm doing right now. Or can you imagine if like I've carved out time to actually read and think and create things? And I had a lot of intention around who I worked with, that I was picky about it. I'm saying this, and you can probably see where this is going. But when I wrote it, it felt like embarrassingly luxurious. It felt impossible. And then I fast forward 2 years, and now that's what I get to do. I decided, and there's a lot of privilege because I have a lot of choices of, in my career and in my jobs, but I decided to change and to make it be a day that I look forward to, not a day I dreaded.
How did you get rid of the guilt?
It was funny. It took time mostly. And now I'm like, I don't feel guilty about this at all. Like in fact, it never occurred to me that I could still really love, like have a job that I felt got a lot back from still, and that I felt like I was making good money and I was making a difference. And still, I thought I'd have to give that up. It's like the performance care, the way of optimizing that. You think you can only have one or the other. But I really realized over time now, oh my gosh, I could have both of those things, right? I could take care of myself and have a really great job and love my work. It at that time when you're so depleted and when you're so exhausted, you just don't see that as a possibility, right? You don't think you could do that. So that's what I know there's a lot of privilege wrapped up in what I got to do, but I think we need to think differently about the possibilities for how our lives can be.
Yeah, I think that's probably stimulated another question for me to you, Caroline. If I can't get out, if I am full of mortgages, young family, like I'm in a job that is having those 16 meetings a day, how, let's say your boss is a dick and he doesn't care, but you're in this cycle, how can you see the signs, but how can you actually take a little bit of control back so that at least you're getting through your day, and then hopefully Groove comes in and we turn your boss into a performance care boss, but.
Yeah, so this is going to sound really overly simple, but it is absolutely crucial. And that is pausing to take care of your basic daily needs. Like, you're no good to anyone, your family, your job, and you're definitely pushing yourself towards burnout if you're not doing the basics, getting as much sleep as is reasonably possible, understanding that their life happens, right? Taking care of yourself physically, taking care of yourself emotionally. This may be, and this looks different for everyone, right? So this, for some people, it might be seeing a therapist. There are amazing therapists out there who have really great impacts on people. It might be the support of a friend or family, but just taking control over those areas where you can frees you up to start seeing possibilities in areas that you might not have previously seen them, to Lara's point. And the brain is going to take whatever you give it. It's not judging, believe it or not. So it's just taking it in. And if you're constantly saying to yourself, oh my gosh, I'm so busy. I'm too busy. I'm too busy. I don't have time for this. I don't have time for that. Your brain's going to go, yeah, you're too busy. And so you can start, one thing we can control this, and to be honest, in all of life, this is the only thing we can control is ourselves, our brains. We can control that. We can control what we put in. And we can control what we feed ourselves in terms of not just food and nutrition, which I have a strong background in that. So I'm really passionate about that, but also what we ingest in terms of information. So how many times do people that are close to burnout, that whose lives seem to be falling around, they'll sit and scroll through Instagram because that gives you a dopamine hit and makes you feel good for a moment. It's fleeting. Other things people might turn to are things like alcohol and excessive working out. So there's some things that are even positive that can be twisted into a negative. So if you stop and say, what are the things that I can control? It's myself, what I'm thinking, what I'm putting into my brain, what I'm putting into my body, and work from that point, what you can control. So
here's a question for you. I've now made you all, as doctors, CEO of a 1,000-person company, right? This company has come from a performance-driven ex-CEO, and he was fantastic for 2 years, and then profits started falling off, and no one knew why. And you're sitting down with JK, who's a troublesome type of person, who's very complicated, but you're going to have a performance care conversation. So three of you can make this up with all your skills from your background. But what would that look like for me? Because I'm used to having the performance conversation, but what would a performance care conversation look like coming from your particular backgrounds?
The first thing I'd want to do is, I don't know you, JK, so I want to know a little bit about you. Because the truth is, everyone has different motivations and different aspirations. And often as leaders, performance-based leaders who are not thinking beyond that, often train and coach as though the person before them was like them. So one of the first things you do as a behavioral scientist is I would say, I've got to know who you are. Where do you see yourself in 2 years and 5 years? What interests you? What makes you as a person excited? Understanding the person before you allows you to then start to, a leader is coach the person before you. So understanding if you're a 16-hour, if I understand, I'd say, what does a normal day look like for you, JK? And if you say, look, I'm really dedicated to work and I get up and I get it here at 8 and I leave at 8 o'clock, that's going to tell me something about you. Once I understand the shape of your day, but I also understand how you, what motivates you, I can start to think about bringing in the knowing you and caring about you. Because a 16-hour day without breaks means, one, you're going to burn out. You might be really engaged, to Laura's point, because we know engagement is something that can, you might love your job, but that isn't sustainable. So I would want to know about the shape of your day, understand who you are as a person, and then start to understand whether you feel valued. And the biggest thing as a leader in an organization that wants to sustain performance is to make sure that people are doing things that suit their skills and talents, is what they want to be doing, and they feel valued for it. So those are the things I'd want to know: who you are, well, the shape of the day is, do you feel valued? And I would build up a plan to make sure that we've got small goals to make sure that you're not doing those 16-hour days all the time and that you've got breaks integrated into them, but that you're working towards maybe a growth and development plan that works for you. Most of all, I need to build trust. A new leader, we don't trust them. It's the way our brain has worked, particularly if we've had old experiences. So knowing you, I want to get to the point where you trust me. And it might not be in that first meeting. The most important thing is you feel valued and that we've built some trust. That's where I'd start.
From an organizational point of view, Laura, how do I organize this so that people actually know that I'm genuine? So how do you actually organizationally do this within your business?
Yeah. So what the piece that I would just add, I mean, Fiona, what Fiona said was so great. The only piece I'd add is I would say, listen, we're trying to create something pretty special here in this organization. We're trying to create a place where people can do their best work, where they are supported, they have everything they need to do an amazing job, to come to work every day and just feel like they can knock it out of the park. And part of that is that we care about people. So we have values here. So I would have already created with the rest of the organization some values that really articulate the kind of culture we're trying to create. And I would help paint that picture with you, JK, and say, this is why it's so important. This is why it matters. And this is what I need everybody to do. What do you think about that? So it would be a bit about raising it up to the collective of what we're trying to do here together. Because that is a way to for people to feel a sense of a bigger purpose at work and also feel more inspired, right? So I would add that to the conversation. And so to your, I think you were asking a slightly different question was how could we get people to do that? We have to make sure that the person who your manager, if it's Fiona or me or Carolyn that was talking to you, that we feel that we get that we've already had that conversation that's happened with us and that we feel connected to the company. And we truly believe and trust, as Fiona said, in the people who are having that conversation with us. So there's a lot that has to happen from an organizational perspective to create that, to roll it out and cascade it in a way where people really believe it to be true. And a lot of that has to do with doing culture work, right? To make sure this isn't just a little initiative. Oh, isn't that cute that you go have those conversations? No, this is just what we do. This is part of who we are. And so that takes real concerted effort, right? And it starts at the top, right? Leaders of an organization have to be able to articulate this and make this come to life for an employee to feel like it's real.
Why are we scared, Caroline? Why are we scared to have the performance and care conversation? Why are we scared to ask someone a little bit deeply about themselves in the work sense?
I think it's just a lack of practice, to be totally honest. This isn't something that we do on a regular basis in the workplace. I think I would want to try and be as authentic of a leader as possible. And so there's a certain amount of vulnerability, just to add to what both of you have already said, there's a certain amount of vulnerability, a lot of vulnerability that comes with that, right? Being your authentic self at work, modeling both performance and care and the balance between those two. And sometimes we get it wrong. Sometimes leaders get it wrong and they have to pause. And so I think being authentic and practicing non-judgmental awareness of yourself and the people around you can have a powerful momentum behind it. But it takes practice. And sometimes the only way to get over something that's scary, I just learned how to surf recently. I was absolutely terrified. I don't know why I was so scared, but I think I was just scared that I wouldn't be able to do it. And sometimes the only way to do it is to grab a surfboard and jump in the water and just try. And with practice and being vulnerable and saying, look, I may make mistakes as a leader, whether you're at the top or you're just leading a small team. Hey, I may make mistakes, but I'm being honest and I'm being vulnerable and I'm going to do the best that I possibly can. And with practice, that starts to get easier and easier. But sometimes the only way, as my grandmother would say, the only way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time, just going at it slowly but surely until eventually you've done it.
I think that's really interesting because one of the things that keeps coming back to me, and I'm incredibly proud of the journey that we've been on and grew, especially now that our technology is integrating into wherever you are in the workplace, MS Teams, Slack, all those different things. But the last point I want to talk to you guys about is habitual change is hard, right? And we talk about we're surfacing the stuff where you're at. And one of the things is a 90-minute break. How do you actually start putting in that day, in your day? So listening to the prompts and start having those little breaks. What can you feel? What can you feel when you've started to make habitual change, Fiona? And should your day start feeling different? And how would it feel different if you start looking after yourself, putting the six pillars, taking your mini breaks? How does that feel?
It can be subtle at first. The idea is, let's use the old elephant, now we'll use Rome wasn't built in a day. But what should happen, and if you do something like running, for instance, if you start exercising, how often have you gone back to exercise and gone, oh, wow, that's right, it makes me feel good? What should happen is that everything will feel a little bit easier. It might not be earth-shattering at the beginning. It's not like you suddenly have this euphoria. Probably not. But what might happen is, and this is what happens with me, on those days I take the breaks. On the days that I'm doing the things that I know you should do and walking the talk, I feel excited about my work. I feel like I can sustain things. I feel like ideas are coming to me. And those are they're subtle, but they're big, the subtle changes. And at the end of the day, if you reflect, human beings need to sometimes reflect and think about the way the day went. And if we can just spend some time pausing and noticing, and if what you've done, and from my perspective around care, is also making sure that you've got things to look forward to and that you're doing those things, that you'll find that you're moving through the world more easily. And that isn't to say that every day is a Yahoo day, because it doesn't really stop. The pressures are there. You'll just hopefully feel like you're managing them better. And you'll have that feeling of going, yeah, this just feels a little bit easier. I don't want to set everyone up to go, at the end of the week, I didn't go, woohoo. Hopefully you do, but that's probably not going to happen. But it just should feel easier.
And from an organizational point of view, Laura, I'm the CEO. I'm now getting $45 million a year to run this business. I brought in this performance care psychology to my work. What should I be starting to see as a boss, as a CEO, some subtle changes around?
Absolutely. Me? I think you would start to see some changes in employee engagement, right? People are feeling that energy. They're excited, that kind of feeling of like things are moving faster. And to Fiona's point, that more easily, like, you start to see that level of engagement really change. And we love focusing on employee engagement because over and over again, we've seen that when you have higher employee engagement, you get better customer satisfaction, higher levels of innovation, better revenue. So really any business outcome that you might care about as a CEO will get better if you have more engagement at work. So that would be one of the main things I would expect to see people to see, expect you to see. I might add that there also might be a little bit more like calm in the system, meaning that there might be a little bit less tension, a little bit less friction, a little bit less gossip. So some of those things, that negative tension that can be created when people are on the edge, when they're crispy, when they've had too much, maybe that'll just settle a little bit.
Carolyn, what does engagement feel like for me? What would be my emotional change when I'm more engaged at work? What does that feel like?
Yeah, so you may notice that you're actually leaning into things versus leaning away or putting up kind of barriers around them. So that's actually a way that you can see in yourself physically you might actually literally lean into a project or lean into what you're doing. I've seen it happen with my students before in the lab, so I can speak to that actually quite clearly. But from an emotional level, a lot of times what you're going to have is clearer thinking. So your head will be clearer. You're not going to be quite so foggy, which is something that's really common when you're being pressured and you're being pushed, is to start to get a bit of a foggy brain. And so you may notice that you're able to think more clearly, problem solve more easily. Your memory might be better. You are probably going to be experiencing things like better sleep if other factors are correct. So you are essentially leaning into your optimal performance. And however that looks for you, because everybody is different. So some people that might be more creative, some people that might be more problem solving, some people that might be more communication and conversation. So everybody's a little bit different, but it's you seeing yourself be your best self, however that looks to you.
So just wrapping up, and you can add to this, so you know how I take notes. This is what I've heard, right? Take 90-minute breaks. Right, from a performance point of view, and make sure you do your six pillars, and you can go on to Groove and understand your six pillars. Performance care, this is a bit messy, but this is what I heard from you guys, right? Can you read that? I'll read it to you. Make sure it's us together. Take 90-minute breaks. Make time to be bored. Have clear values from a business point of view. Engage your people in those values, so share the values. Take everybody on the journey, know the person, make sure you set common goals together, trust. That's probably a whole conversation in itself. And leaning in. And the last, well, there's two more. Be bored, people. Be bored. It engages your right brain and disengages your left brain, and it means you'll be able to have light bulb moments. I'm really going to throw my phone out and get bored, which is really good. And I thought, this was important than the hero stuff. Make sure you're sharing with your workmates. Take people on your own personal journey. And leaders, think first of your team rather than the bottom line, and then the bottom line will come. So that's the stuff I heard. I don't know if you guys want to add anything. And I hope you understood and ignored my spelling mistakes, you doctors, you.
I loved it. I mean, this is the best thing about, well, there's many best things about JK, but the fact that he listens and he really gets it, it's always so delightful. I just wanted to clarify the 90-minute break. It's not taking a break for 90 minutes, right? It's taking a break at the 90-minute point. I'm just thinking of the pedants who are watching and going, oh, they're telling me I've got 90 minutes to take a break. But that was so beautifully encapsulated that I genuinely think we need to keep that, JK, and pop them on slides. Perfect.
Anything else you'd like to add for someone who might be a little bit scared to slow down, or someone who's a CEO that's just a little bit scared to start those conversations that we want, because they are scary, right? Caroline, what would you do?
I think Laura was about to say something, so please feel free to go ahead, Laura.
I think sometimes when we have that kind of fear, to me, it's just taking a step back, right, and thinking about what really matters here. And I think we get so caught up in the short term and the goals that we have for this quarter or this month, and that we forget the bigger picture of how do we create a place where there's much more of a sense of meaning and purpose, where we're doing this in the collective. And I think that's what more leaders need to do, is they need to take a step back and really think about the bigger picture. That would be my recommendation when you're facing that kind of fear. Usually it's something that, at least my experience, has been a short-term concern or worry.
Nice.
And just go ahead, Jake.
No, Carolyn, you go. Yeah.
I was going to say, just to add to that, sometimes it can be really helpful to pause and reflect and say, yes, I might be scared of this, but the outcome is going to be so wonderful that it's worth it. And so it's just a matter of saying, motivating yourself to move past the fear. And one of the best ways to motivate could be to look at the outcome and say, yeah, this is absolutely, it's worth the momentary fear for that particular outcome.
Yeah, with change comes fear. We know that. The idea that we do something differently, Carolyn, on a different podcast, will explain to you why the brain does not love uncertainty or change. But I think both Carolyn and Laura have spoken to the idea that it's worth it. This is really about creating sustainable businesses that do their best work. So to my mind, it's why wouldn't you? And the amazing thing is that leaders, CEOs, you get engaged more. You feel better. It's just like feeling good and functioning better and doing all of those things. Really, why wouldn't you? I understand sometimes it feels hard because we are busy. And a lot of the barriers, yeah, I want to get to that, but now we've got to deal with this thing over here. The answer to that is this is the thing over here. If you're worried about the performance over here, this is the thing over here. So just take that leap of faith because we know that it works. We are about science, but we also see it in organizations that will bite the, I don't like the word bite the bullet, but will take that leap of faith. Or it's not even faith, it's based on science. So I think workplace science is really the heart of it. It's going, where do we want to be? This is the pathway. It's not going to happen by doing nothing. It does require effort, but it's just so worth it.
Thank you, you beautiful people, you and bringing all that brainy stuff to me. I loved it. So when you were talking, I'm thinking, I try and put myself into a position of being a coach, being a leader, being a CEO in a business. And I think the things that we need to do to change, and I think rugby, because we're judged every week and you've got to move pretty quickly, I think in the performance care space, they're pretty good. But the summary, I heard this, that's really important if you're a CEO. So your values, make sure you create them together. It needs to be meaningful with purpose. And then pause. It's going to be scary. Just pause and think about the fear. And change. Your brain doesn't like it, but it's worth it. So your brain's going to tell you not to do it. So jump into it. Thank you, everybody. That was awesome. Great way to start back after a two-year hiatus. And what I'm going to try and do for those that are listening, I'm going to try and talk to some amazing people about performance, but also about personal care and how they care for others so that we can put all the science. And I think the beautiful thing about starting back with the three doctors is that you can come back to this as a reference around the science and all the specialities. So thanks for your time, people. See you soon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, JK.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on Open Minded. To keep up with each episode, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and follow us on social media at GrooveNow or groovenow.com. With Groove, we're bringing performance care to the world of work and beyond. Stay well, and I look forward to sharing more with you next time.